And welcome to another Trev and Ben podcast. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Trev. How are you?
I'm all right. Did you survive Storm Bert?
I did. I must say, I mean, my heart goes out to anyone who's been affected by it because I think it caused significant damage and people's homes have been damaged. However, I can't take it seriously if we're going to call it Storm Bert.
But, I mean, it does sound like an old man.
It does.
But they often give them sort of old names. I remember 1 year ago, do you remember, was it Storm Doris? No disrespect to anyone called Doris.
No.
But Doris to me sounds like a lady that you see with a sort of shopping trolley, white hair. Yeah, well, you know her. She's one of those locals you've known for years. You shout across the street, "All right, Doris? Everything all right, Doris? Need anything? Need any shopping doing, Doris?" You don't expect her to blow with disastrous consequences.
No, you don't. So, as terrible as it was, I just think we need a slightly more, I don't know, enigmatic, sexy, dare I say it, scary sounding name than Storm Bert.
Although I did, I mean, Bert and Ernie came to mind, and I thought, well, if they were to call the next one Ernie.
Yeah, but again, Bert and Ernie didn't famously invoke terror, did they, really?
Well, I don't know. They were pretty frightening at times. So, no, I don't think Bert's a great name for a storm, but it came when it conquered and blew a tree down in my parents' garden.
Really?
That's how ferocious Bert was.
Well, there you go. It came, it blew, it conquered. We could call it Storm Napoleon.
Did Napoleon say that?
Well, he said it. No, he didn't say he blew. He said, "I came, I saw, I conquered."
Wasn't
didn't
that Julius Caesar?
No. What? Oh, was it? Hang on a minute.
Hang on, you're going to have to look this up now. Because I'm sure it was Julius Caesar. Because it's, what is it? Vidi, Vici, Vinci. Is the Latin.
Blimey.
Vici, Vidi, Vinci, actually. It's I came, I saw, I conquered. My Latin has finally paid off. 30 years after
I
left school.
Don't know who said it.
Right. Well, it's Julius Caesar, surely.
Shall I ask a friend of the show, Graham Peter Turner?
Yes.
Hey, Graham Peter Turner, who said, "I came, I saw, I conquered"? He's giving me the sound.
He hasn't got much to say on the matter, has he?
Come on, why are you talking to me, man? Hey, GPT, who said, "I came, I saw, I conquered"?
That's fucking useless, this AI.
Why aren't you talking to me?
What have you done to upset AI?
I don't know. Hey, Graham Peter Turner, who said, "I came, I saw, I conquered"?
I'm just going to Google it, mate. I mean, this is ridiculous.
That would still be Julius Caesar, Ben. Trying to catch me out, eh?
No, I wasn't trying to catch you out. I was just asking. What's the Latin translation, please?
Oh, fair enough. The Latin translation is Veni, Vidi, Vici. It's short, Veni. Punchy, and classic Caesar. Perfect for a victory mic drop.
It's Veni. I should have known that. That's one of the basic verbs of Latin.
I must say, I'm going right off him. I mean, first of all, he ignores me. Then he thinks I'm trying to trick him. Yeah. And then I got a level of sass from him that I didn't really appreciate.
You get treated the way you treat people, Ben.
I'm always very nice.
So anyway, Napoleon didn't say it. Basically, that's the upshot of this, is Napoleon didn't say it.
Okay, well, the point stands. I mean, Storm Caesar sounds pretty cool, does it not?
Storm Caesar.
There you go.
Yes.
Although, I know this is my second week in a row, I think, of doing my Napoleon jokes, but we do need a Storm Napoleon for a particularly bad wind when things are blown apart. Oh, it wasn't that bad.
I think I edited the one out last week. When you say it's the second, if this makes the edit, it's the first.
Oh, no. This is terrible news. This is not going to make any sense to anyone.
Anyway, the main thing is we survived, Bert. That's all we need to know. How's your week been otherwise?
Other than that, my week has been full of frustration. My usual problems of people dawdling in front of me. You know how I used to complain about people who would be on their phones when you're trying to leave a train station ramp?
Yeah.
And you just can't get past them and they're not paying attention to the world. And my ongoing issue with supermarkets, I get a brief window of time to go into the supermarket to grab some lunch. I don't need dickheads in there who are faffing around, wasting staff time with stupid problems. So I've come up with a solution which I think will save a lot of time, a lot of staff hours, a lot of money in the long run for everyone involved.
Okay.
And more importantly, my lunch hour.
Right. So, okay, what's the idea?
Idiot tax.
Idiot tax.
Yeah.
How are you implementing that in a supermarket? I mean, who's deciding whether that person is an idiot or not?
That'll be up to the member of staff, but they will be completely protected by law.
Right. So what's the idiot tax?
For example, I'm queuing up with my sandwich, and if someone's in front of me in the queue and they're quick and they're buying whatever they want, fine, no problem. But I'm stood behind some idiot and I can overhear what's being said to the member of staff who was trying to be very polite and deal with him as pleasantly as possible. This moron had been sent to the supermarket to buy a bottle of mayonnaise. So he picked up a bottle of Heinz mayonnaise, went home, and obviously he caused a bit of a mini domestic.
Right.
He was supposed to buy Hellman's mayonnaise.
Okay. God.
So he then trots back to the shops with his tail between his legs. And I have to overhear this conversation about how he's bought the wrong mayonnaise. Is he all right to exchange it for the Hellman's mayonnaise because yeah. It's the same price, he's checked? And the woman says, well, yes, I suppose so. Do you happen to have your receipt? I says, no. And she said, well, how do we know you bought it from here if you haven't got a receipt? And he said, oh, well, I was only here a few minutes ago, honest.
Yeah.
And I just thought, no, this is exactly the moment idiot tax kicks in.
Right.
You take the loss, you go home, you choke down your Heinz mayonnaise, and you live with your mistake. No refund, no faffing around, no wasting my time behind you in the queue. Take the loss and fuck off home.
Or, I mean, you'd still take a loss, but just go and buy the jar of Hellman's.
Also happy with that solution too.
Yeah.
Don't hold up the queue because of your mayonnaise-based incompetence.
But do you not think, though, Ben, that this is symptomatic of the problems that supermarkets have now brought upon themselves by reducing staff and having all the self-service checkouts? Because in the old days, Ben, when I was a young man, there would always be a desk at a supermarket just for this sort of thing. There'd be
yes.
the customer service desk. The normal checkout aisle wouldn't be clogged up with this sort of incident. There'd be a desk specifically for returns and refunds.
I agree. And, well, you know, now they've put the customer service desk, the tobacco kiosk, and the lottery kiosk all in the same thing. So there's a real bottleneck now, a bottleneck of absolute morons who all want refunds, lottery tickets paid with pennies. They also want the lottery concept explained to them. Someone wants to return the mayonnaise with no receipt. What really annoyed me was this very competent, helpful lady eventually managed to help this moron because it turned out he'd used his Nectar card to get his mayonnaise points.
Oh, all's well that ends well.
Not for me, because then I had to wait whilst they went and sorted that problem out.
But what would you be doing with your time?
Eating lunch.
Well, you could then eat it. I mean, how many minutes were taken up by this?
This man is causing potential indigestion because I'm going to have to rush my lunch now. Another con, whilst I'm on the subject of supermarkets, is that they have managed to introduce self-service counters.
Can I just say, sorry to interrupt you, Ben.
Go on.
But your obsession with supermarkets over the last couple of weeks has gone to new levels.
Their ability to introduce self-service checkouts like they're a brand new, time-saving, brilliant, newfangled idea. It's not. It's that you can't be bothered to pay the staff and you've managed to convince the general public that this is faster, and it isn't.
Why don't we also bring in, if we're going to be using AI more and self-service stuff, have an AI bot that deals with wrongly bought jars of mayonnaise. So that particular customer goes up to the AI bot and says, hello, let's call him Graham. Hello, Graham, I've bought the wrong mayonnaise. Can I exchange it for Hellman's? And he says, yeah, of course, if you've got the receipt. And he says, no, I haven't got the receipt. At which point they exterminate him. It's like a Dalek.
I'm well up for that. By the way, I should stress that the idiot tax isn't just a financial punishment. It's a time punishment. For example, if your phone rings with an unknown mobile number, Trev, I know the answer from you. Will you answer that?
No.
So have you wasted time?
No.
If you answer an unknown mobile number and you end up wasting 20 minutes on some sort of customer survey or some shit, that's your fault for answering, my friend. That is idiot tax.
I suppose.
I even paid some idiot tax myself recently. I told you I watched the Mike Tyson-Jake Paul fight. Idiot tax. The undercard was decent. The 16 minutes I watched those two clown around for. That's idiot tax. That's that's 16, 18 minutes of my life I will never get back.
Yeah.
Idiot tax.
Idiot tax. Well, let's bring it in then. Let's bring this in when we run the country, Ben, when we finally get power. That's something we'll bring in. I mean, there are things that I think... I don't want to deny people medical treatment.
Okay.
Right? But I think if you are riding a bicycle at night with no lights and no fluorescent clothing and you get knocked over by a bus, sort of your fault.
I mean, yes, I agree. I'd also like to widen that out to any 16-year-old who's got his first moped, who's going to go doing a wheelie down the fucking high street and falls off.
Yeah, yeah.
Idiot tax.
Yeah.
You're getting seen last in A&E, my friend.
Yes. I was on a bus the other day where we almost hit a bike because the guy had no lights, nothing on. And you see, what? It's a basic thing, isn't it? If you're going to be on a bike at night, I don't know whether it's arrogance... Do you think, well, it's, you know, people should see me? Because there's a lot of arrogance in younger people. I fear, Ben, as I get older, I see it. I see arrogance in young people. And almost like, well, if it's your fault you've hit me. No, it's your fault. Just have some fucking lights on. That's a basic requirement, surely. Being on a bicycle at night.
I think you're taking my idiot tax and you're getting a bit Darwinian with it. Sort of survival of the fittest. Was that Darwin or was it Napoleon or was it Caesar? I like your examples, but I think yours are a little bit survival of the fittest, whereas mine's a bit more broad. If you do anything that wastes your own time, wastes your own money, if you invest in cryptocurrency or crypto coins because Logan Paul told you to, and it costs you your life savings, idiot tax.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, that's just the way it should go.
I once went to visit a friend. And I thought we were going to go for a beer. But when I got to his flat, he said, oh, we can't go for a beer because I've got someone coming round. And I thought it was another mate coming round. So this guy turns up and they're chatting away about music and all sorts of things. I'm thinking, oh, they obviously really know each other well. And then this weird conversation turned into... a sales pitch from the other bloke that had arrived for what was clearly a pyramid scheme.
Oh, no.
And I find myself in the middle of this pitch for a pyramid scheme.
Were you the mark? Were you the target?
well, the guy turned to me in the end. He said, well, I mean, would you be interested? I went, certainly not. No. I wouldn't be interested in that at all. Anyway, the guy then went and... my mate said, what do you think? I went, well, it's clearly a pyramid scheme. I mean, I wouldn't get involved in that at all. And then he phoned me up about 2 days later and he said, Trevor, I just want to check something with you again. What did you think of all that the bloke was saying the other day? I said, well, clearly a pyramid scheme. I wouldn't touch it with a barge pole. And he went, oh, I've signed up.
Oh, no.
And I said, well, is there a cooling off period? Because, you know, if there is, do it now. Get out of it. And I think he managed to get out of it. But you sort of feel like if there wasn't a cooling off period and you found yourself signed up to that, idiot tax.
Yeah, I actually think that's almost the highest order of idiot tax, because he was warned twice by you before he fell for it. That's super idiot tax.
Do you remember a few years ago? There was this trend, and I knew a few people that were doing it. Again, it was they were sort of pyramid schemes, I think, where you would sell either sort of health supplements, or some people were doing like makeup and bath accessories, and you know all that sort of stuff. But they had to sell a certain amount every month. You had to invest a certain amount, buy a lot of stock, and then you had to sell that.
Yes.
But then you had to get other people on board to do it. And I had a couple of people get in touch with me and say, would you like to get involved? No way. I'm not buying loads of shit that I've then got to try and sell to people who don't want it. Or would you like some mint-flavoured lip balm or something? So no, people aren't interested. Would you like a pumice stone? I mean, it's just unbelievable. But, you know, had I have said yes, and I've been lumbered with all... I haven't got a garage, but essentially a house full of cosmetic goods that I couldn't sell, my fault.
I agree. Although I do want to point out for anyone who thinks that idiot tax might be a little bit brutal... like all taxes, it does have nuance to it. For example, if Trev, you, in your mid-40s, tell me
that you have just say mid-40s when
I'm being generous. If you tell me you've just lost 300, 500 quid, and I say, well, how did you do that? And then you tell me that you received an email from the son of the deposed king of Nigeria asking you to free up some funds so that they can then transfer you $80 million.
Yes.
Then I would say you're a fucking moron, idiot tax.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're in your mid-80s and you do the same thing, I've got some sympathy for you.
Yes. So when does that kick in then? What age?
Well, it's a bit of a grey line, that one. So I think the rule of thumb would be if you were to ask the general public, take it a bit like Family Fortunes.
Right.
We asked 100 people, is this person an idiot? And if the general consensus comes back as they should have known better or this person's vulnerable and they've been conned, that's where we say idiot tax either does or doesn't apply.
I've got a problem with that.
It's a 50-50 split.
Well, no, you're asking the general public, and most of the general public are fucking idiots anyway. I mean, you've already mentioned in this podcast a couple of historic figures. We've mentioned Napoleon and Julius Caesar.
Yes, we have.
Have you ever wondered what they would actually have sounded like?
I haven't given it much thought, no.
Because these are things I think about. If I watch a documentary, like recently I was watching a documentary about Henry VIII, and I often think, isn't it a shame we don't know what he sounded like? We've got paintings of him, and we've got those records, we've got written records, but obviously there was no way of recording his voice back in those days.
That's very true.
See, so I wonder what Henry VIII would have sounded like. Would he have sounded like our royal family sound now, with that sort of posh accent? Or would he have been less refined? I mean, when I think Ray Winston played Henry VIII in a TV series a few years back, and I think Ray Winston played him like Ray Winston would play him.
Of course, because that's the only range Ray Winston has.
But maybe,
oh, fucking head off.
But maybe he did talk like that. We just don't know, do we? And I find that quite... I can't completely put a person together in my mind. I don't know whether it's because in my working life, the voice has been so important that I sort of need a voice. It's a bit like that thing... I mean, it's different these days, Ben, where you've got the internet and everything's filmed and put out. But when I was a kid and I had all the ambition to get into radio and I had my radio heroes, it wasn't in those days, it wasn't as easy to just look up what they looked like. You know, you didn't know what they looked like. And I remember seeing a picture of Graham Dean, who was my first radio hero, right? Someone said to me, well, that's Graham Dean. And I couldn't put the voice and the face together, and it was years before I saw a video of Graham Dean talking, and I thought, oh, finally I can lay that ghost to rest. That is his voice and that is him.
That's interesting. I think the problem with the example you've given of Henry VIII is that I can't undo the voice I already imagine, and it's because, and I know he's someone we regularly mention on the on the podcast, but I've seen Brian Blessed do Henry VIII, and now I can't unhear it, so I will forever think King Henry VIII sounds like Brian Blessed.
I think that probably is the voice I had in my mind. I once played the character Henry VIII for a school class. They were doing a thing on Henry VIII. They said, will you come and be Henry VIII? So I got a little fake beard, and I think I probably did that voice, because I think the kids had to come and present me with gifts or something. Oh, it was a banquet as well. There was like a banquet.
Nice.
And I do remember sort of going, go off with his head, and doing basically Brian Blessed's voice.
And you just take that same Henry VIII impression and just soften it slightly, and you've got Santa.
Exactly. It's the same voice. But I doubt in real life Henry VIII and Santa were that closely aligned.
No, I very much doubt it. And also the same is to be said about the dinosaurs. People watch films like Jurassic Park and think they know what Tyrannosaurus Rex sounds like.
Of course they don't know.
Not a clue.
Chances are they sounded more like a chicken.
It could have sounded like a kazoo.
they may have been silent. We don't know, do we? We don't know. And that is a thing that frustrates. It's one of those things that I kind of feel like when my time comes, Ben, and whatever happens when you pass on from this world, I sort of hope those sort of things are revealed to you. Do you know what I mean? I sort of hope that while you're being taken to the next world or whatever it is, wherever you go, or even if you go nowhere, but in your final moments, there's sort of just something that comes along and goes, oh, this is how these dinosaurs sounded. You know, the Tyrannosaurus Rex went...
I won't put you on the spot right now, but maybe it's something to think about for next week's podcast. But this concept has bothered me before, which is if when you die and you get to the pearly gates, and as you're guided in, they say to you, we will reveal one, but only one of life's mysteries as a welcome present to heaven. What do you pick? So you can I can either put you on the spot with that now, or we can save that as a little nugget for next week's podcast.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, though, I sort of feel like if you're at the pearly gates and you're... I mean, it does depend on your belief system, I suppose. But presumably, beyond that, everything's going to be revealed to you anyway.
No, I should have probably stressed the caveats to this. But yeah, fit it in with whatever religious denomination you are or you fancy. That's fine. But whatever gates you're going through, apply it to that. We're not going to get too bogged down in religion right now. But you get one revealed to you. And once you're on the other side, you can't confer. You can't then find me once I pop my clogs, assuming you go first.
Yeah.
And say, Ben, what was your mystery? What was the answer? You can't do that.
Why can't you do that?
Because I'm making these arbitrary rules and we have to stick
to them. Ridiculous. I mean, does that mean that you don't meet other people?
No, you can meet,
gate?
You can chat, but the rule is
you can't
share the mystery you had revealed to you as your welcome to heaven.
Otherwise, Peter comes along and goes, right, that's it. Off down to hell you go.
Also played by Brian Blessed.
Yeah. Although surely God would, whatever your God is, would have that voice. St. Peter's probably, he's probably a bit more like, you know, mealy mouthed, weedy bishop.
I think I can imagine him, yes, that's it, with his spectacles just on the end of his nose, checking his clipboard judiciously. Yeah.
You just have a look, Ben Harmer.
You see if you're on the list.
You're on the list of maybe allowed in.
Better than I thought.
You're lucky you're at the gates, to be honest.
I know. I must have sort of followed someone very closely behind them who had a genuine ticket. I've sort of tailgated my way up to the gates of heaven. Can I ask you next week what your one mystery... I think it's a bit much to put you on the spot with now. So maybe next week?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, because, I mean, there's a lot for me to think about there.
There is. Going back to your vocal thing.
Do you think... What does Napoleon sound like? I think he would have been, obviously, the French. I think he would have been very... very aggressive.
Possibly, but who would be the most disappointing figure in history if you thought there's someone historic, they were brave, they led an army, they were fierce, bold, and they sound like, I don't know, like Timmy Mallett.
What a choice, Timmy Mallett.
Who's the other? Joe Pasquale. Who would be the most disappointing figure in history? Someone that everyone looked up to as an absolute warrior king, and it turns out he sounded like Joe Pasquale.
Oh, no, that's someone like William Wallace. You won't take our freedom.
Yeah. I mean, imagine, Churchill doesn't apply because we know how
we know, obviously, Churchill sounds very much like that.
I know, but I'm just trying to think of we'll fight them on the beaches, but if it sounded like Elmo.
or Hannibal, you know, he took his elephants across the mountains.
Yes.
You know, imagine that, he got to the end of that and they said, Hannibal, how did you do it? Oh, I just carried all the whole thing, just all followed me. I just had some peanuts and they followed me.
Yeah, or maybe Jesus Christ. I don't want to get too blasphemous.
Oh, mate, what are you getting into here?
What if he sounded like Chris Eubank? Wouldn't that be...
I'm the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me.
I like it. I might have paid more attention in religious studies.
But anyway, going back to the voices, the reason that I wanted to talk to you about this is because they have recreated the voice of Richard III.
Now, he was the one who was found under the car park, wasn't he?
Exactly, yes.
Right. Is he checking people have paid the NCP? Is that what he's doing?
So at York Theatre Royal, they've basically created an avatar of King Richard III. And what they've done is, with scientific help, of course, because when they found him under the car park, they obviously now had his skull. So they've recreated his face. They've sort of put together what they think he looked like. And they thought, we can see now how his muscles were and how his voice box would have worked. So they were able to really put what they feel is an accurate voice together. And it's come out more Yorkshire than they thought.
Okay, I'm Richard III.
Aye.
Well, oh, I'm buried under a car park. Fuck. Well,
have a listen, because I'm not sure. It sounds more Irish to me.
Okay.
But have a listen to Richard III.
The clarity and charity of the sun's light is so great that when it is poured on the other heavenly bodies, the sun sheens with no less light and splendour. Nor does it suffer any diminution of its strength. Rather, it is pleased to be seen, to sheen as a king in the midst of his nobles.
I mean, there is Yorkshire in there.
A touch. I mean, it did sound like if Dynamo was Irish. It was very strange, that. Is this AI generated, or have they got an actor, a voice actor in, or?
They got an actor in, but they gave him all the briefing they needed, because they worked with speech therapists as well, and language therapists. They looked at his dentistry, all the other bits. So they really went on a deep dive into how his voice would sound, and they got an actor to represent the voice.
Oh, I feel a bit bad now I'm knocking an actual voice actor, but I mean, that was Wandering Accent Syndrome if I've ever heard it. I mean, that was all over the place. Now, I was going to sympathise, because if that was AI, my Bruce, or Blue Forsyth, as he was,
yes.
I mean, he was going all over the globe. He ended up firmly in Australia by the end of it.
He went very Australian, didn't he? Yes.
So I can sympathise with that, but for that to be a professional voice actor, that's leaving a bit to be desired, I should think.
But then he's only doing what he's been asked to do, isn't he? You know, he's probably there with all those people, and they're probably directing him to give it in that way. So it's not the actor's fault; it'd be the people directing him.
You've directed voiceover before, Trev. Would you have let him out of the studio with that? Would you have thought, well, we've got it in the can?
But if that's what you think he sounded like, if that's what you're after. And maybe the Yorkshire accent has changed over the years. It might have had a bit more of an Irish lilt to it.
Okay, fine.
No, do we?
I don't know. I don't know.
The Celts ruled more widely.
Yes, true. I mean, I don't know my Napoleons from my Julius Caesars, so I'll give you that. Yes, I could well be wrong.
Now, there are some other scientists who, back in 2020, during a time of lockdown, when really they probably
should have been... Back in 2020? You mean, what, 4 years ago?
Well, this was when they really should have been looking into, you know, vaccines for the COVID. Yeah. But what these scientists did was they were working on an ancient Egyptian mummy, and they put it through scans, and they looked at its facial features, a similar sort of process, really, to try and work out what an ancient Egyptian mummy would sound like.
Okay. When you say what an ancient Egyptian mummy would sound like, you mean before death and mummification?
Well, yes, of course. Because after death, well, we don't know, do we? I mean, after death, do we have a voice?
Well, that's a very...
we don't know, do we?
Philosophical question. But this is just basically them wanting to find out what people used to sound like during the time of the Egyptians, or the great ancient Egyptians.
Yeah, this is a 3,000-year-old mummy. Obviously, more of the tissue is preserved in a mummy, so they had more to play with in terms of the sort of vocal cords and all that sort of thing.
I don't like the word play with. I prefer if scientists are experimenting with rather than playing with the corpses.
Well, what they did was they 3D printed the mouth and vocal cords of this mummy called Nesyamun, who was a priest.
But surely just having the vocal cords and the mouth isn't good enough, because if you just had my disembodied vocal cords and mouth, that would make my voice sound different to when it's housed with inside my body, would it not?
Well, have a listen to what they created.
Okay.
Bear in mind, this took a lot of time, probably a lot of money, and a lot of effort to get this recreation of a 3,000-year-old mummy's voice. And all I'll say is, prepare to be blown away. That's it. That's what... That's all they've managed to get.
That took money, did it?
There we go. That's the voice of a 3,000-year-old mummy.
It sounds like a sound effect from a games console that was around 30 years before I was born.
Yes, it does. It sounds like a game noise. I mean, they did say they couldn't recreate the voice that well because her tongue had completely deteriorated, so there was no tongue to help. But I mean, what is the point of going to all this effort if you know you can't actually do it and all you're going to get is because you could make that up.
Yes,
I could say to you, Ben, I've spent the last 4 years recreating the voice of give me another historic figure.
Let me think. Do we have to know what they sound like, or is that
no well, it's better if you don't, obviously.
William the Conqueror.
There we go. So I said, Ben, you've often said to me, it's often come up in conversation, I wish I knew what William the Conqueror sounded like. And I said, well, it's funny you should mention that, Ben, because I've spent the last 4 years working out his facial structures, his vocal cords, his tongue. Obviously, remember, he was French. Just throw that in so you know.
Yeah.
I've 3D printed his voice box. And
Sounds great. Now, remember, Trev, I did give you a £1 million grant for this scientific research. Well, so I'm expecting you've really done your homework on this.
Yeah. Are you ready to hear William the Conqueror's voice?
And this is £1 million of my money and 4 years of my time waiting for this, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
And, okay.
And the time and effort of hundreds of scientists.
I'm on the edge of my seat.
Oil.
Now, I'd like to look at some of your research papers because I feel like you might be mugging me off. Or do you need another million to refine it somewhat?
No, I mean, I think that's as good as you're going to get. I don't know what more you want. That's surely enough.
I noticed you've been doing a lot of your research down the pub with my grant. Is that right?
No, I had to go to France a lot as well, didn't I? Now, Ben, if I can just stay on the science theme for a moment.
Yes.
Because I've just been reading a lot of science stuff this week. And as you can tell so far, it's all been very worthwhile.
It's been gold. Absolute gold.
And then I came across this week that I think this could be the way humans should go. There's a scientist who's come up with a theory. This is only a theory at this stage. But the theory is that humans could learn how to hibernate and go between a life and death state.
Can you explain what go between a life and death state means?
Well, it's like, because when animals hibernate properly, you know, there are some animals. I was watching a thing the other day, and there was there's a bat. I forget the exact name of this bat.
But it's the research into your science that I appreciate the most.
Well, this bat, it lives in the... I can't even remember where it lived, but very cold, very cold.
I gave you as a present a podcast book of notes. Whenever you hear something, just get a pen, just jot it down. Yes. I gave you a book to do that. You can't remember what the bat is or where it's from.
No, but see, the thing is, my brain has only just remembered this. Just because I'm talking about hibernation, this thing didn't come to mind until you asked the question about the state. And I'm going to use this as the example to explain it to you. And you probably don't need to know the name of the bat or where it is, except it lives in a very cold climate.
Right. Okay.
And what it does, it slows its body right down to survive. So this is where you're in the state between life and death, because it slows its heartbeat down to one beat per minute whilst it hibernates.
Okay.
And then when it finally comes out of hibernation, then it has to just lay there for a little while its body warms up. And its heart rate then goes through the roof. It was something like like 300 beats per minute. It goes from one beat per minute to something like 300 beats per minute in a matter of minutes. And I guess that's the state between life and death while you're in hibernation, isn't it?
Sort of Schrodinger's bat.
Yes, if you like.
It's neither quite alive nor dead. It's somewhere in the middle.
Yes. And there aren't many species of animal in the UK that actually hibernate. I think there's only 3 species that do it. But this scientist believes that humans could learn how to hibernate.
For what end? Would it mean we live longer?
You would probably live longer. You would obviously be able to bunker down for the winter. If we're going to be in a world eventually where AI is doing everything, you're not going to be working, are you? So you might as well have a sleep for 6 months.
Does your body still age in the same physical way as it would normally? I'd rather not be 160 and not be able to move for the last sort of 80 years of my life.
Well, I don't know that. I mean, I'm assuming that we'd get to the point where you could slow your metabolism down. Perhaps that would stop the aging process.
Why would my metabolism speed up my aging process?
Well, because obviously if your body's doing things quicker, it's going to age you quicker, surely. That's just pure science. That's pure science, pure biology there, Ben. Right at you.
I'm going to have you struck off whatever kind of scientific board you stole your qualifications from.
Funny enough, I've never been invited on any scientific board. But, you know, because I'm a layman scientist. I don't believe you need all the details. I'm just saying. I mean, if you look at when I had Mr. Tortoise.
R.I.P.
R.I.P. Mr. Tortoise. It would be around this time of the year that he would go into hibernation. And I'd bring him in and I'd put him in his little box of straw for the winter, right? And when he woke up in the summer, how much has he aged? A lot.
It's hard to tell how much a tortoise has aged. Yeah,
no more wrinkles on him, as far as I could tell, when he came out of hibernation.
Mind you, they do live about 250 years, don't they?
Well, some of them do, not all, but yes, some of them can live. I think that there's one. Has he died recently? George on the Galapagos Islands. I think he might have died. He was the last of his species, and he was something like 250 years old.
Wow.
I mean, that's extraordinary, isn't it? But, I mean, to be able to live that long, you're not going to be aging, surely, at the same rate as another animal. You know, when you look at something like a gerbil, what, 3 years is the lifespan of a gerbil, something like that? You know, because look at the speed at which they do everything at. You know, their body's always, they're aging quicker.
So you're thinking there's a definitive correlation between speed and lifespan?
Well, not necessarily.
So if a sloth falls out of a tree and is temporarily going 30 miles an hour down to the ground, will that shave some of the life off?
I'd imagine the shock of falling out of a tree is going to shave a little bit of time off, yes. And also the impact on the ground might take a few years off, to be honest. I mean, how long does a sloth live?
I don't know.
Ask AI how the average lifespan of a three-toed sloth.
Why so specific?
Well, there's two types of sloth. I'm imagining they both have a similar lifespan, but there's a three-toed one. I can't remember. Is the other one just a two-toed sloth?
I don't know. Which question would you like asked first?
Well, just ask about a sloth in general. The lifespan of a sloth. I mean, the speed of a sloth in general, I think a sloth should live to about 600.
Okay. Hey, Graham Peter Turner, what is the average lifespan of a sloth?
The average lifespan of a sloth depends on the species, but generally, sloths live around 20 to 30 years in the wild. In captivity, where they face fewer predators and have consistent food, they can live even longer, sometimes up to 40 years.
There you go.
Now, you've done longer than 40 years, and yes. you are significantly faster than a sloth, so I think that ruins your theory.
Well, it puts a hole in it, but I'm sticking to my theory. So if we were to hibernate, we could perhaps live longer and age slower.
But we don't have any immediate predators, do we, really?
No, not really. But that doesn't make any difference when it comes to hibernating, does it?
I don't know. I imagine it would. I would sleep a lot less comfortably if I thought there was something hunting me whilst I did so.
Well, that's all right then, isn't it? So hibernation would be perfect for us. We wouldn't have to worry about someone digging into our burrow.
Well, I don't want to get too sleepy. Too depressing about things, but we already lose about a third of our life to sleep on its own.
Yeah. I mean, I'd like more, really. I'd like to sleep more. I think, basically what I'm saying is I'd like to hibernate. And I guess it's all part of evolution anyway, and maybe the environmental changes that will happen over the next millennia or more, maybe we will evolve to hibernate. We might have to hibernate, actually, in the summer. When it's too hot for us, you know, when global warming really kicks in, we might have to hibernate in the summer months.
I think you're just getting to an age now where you just want to lie in and nice comfy pair of slippers.
The downside of this isn't going to happen in my lifetime. I mean, I'm not going to... The body has to learn how to hibernate. I couldn't just say to you, oh, Ben, from now on, I'm going to hibernate for 6 months, because that wouldn't happen. Your natural... What's it called? The circadian rhythm, is it?
Of your sounds body? Right, yes.
Is that what it's called?
I've heard of the circadian rhythm, I think, yeah.
I think that's it. You know, that would kick in. So presumably that's what you've got to train differently. That's what's got to change, is the natural cycle of life. You know, when there's daylight, you're awake. You don't want that. You want to be sleeping.
What about a medically induced coma?
Well, I've often thought I wouldn't mind that. But then you think of all the other things involved in that. Because if you learn how to hibernate, your body, your body will shut down everything. If you go into an induced coma, it puts you to sleep. But I mean, think about all the other things. You know, you're going to have a catheter put in. You know, you're going to have to... There's all sorts of other things that you're going to have done, because you're not going to slow everything down. You know, that's the thing about an animal. When it slows everything down, it's not going to need to eat. So it's not going to need to drink. It's not going to need to go to the toilet. It's not going to need any of that. And that's where we've got to get to.
And also, we couldn't have all of the population hibernating at once, because we need someone to be awake to bring us all out of the coma. So we're going to need half the population...
Yes.
During the winter, and half the population during the summer, and we've got to make sure that all of the anaesthetists and doctors aren't all in one group, otherwise we're screwed.
Yeah, well, that's a problem that we would have to, but that's if we're doing it medically. If we're just learning how to hibernate and naturally we all just go to sleep, because one hemisphere would still be going. Let's say we all, whether it's winter or summer, whenever we decide naturally is the best time to hibernate, then whilst the seasons are different, the other hemisphere, one side of the world will continue to operate and continue to work while the other half takes time out.
Well, it begs the question, if you were able to hibernate for half the year, would you choose to skip summer or winter?
I'd skip summer. No question in my mind. I hate the heat, as you know. I hate the summer. I much prefer it colder. So if I could sleep during the summer months, then that would be fine.
You see, I think I'd be the opposite, because I don't like the darkness in the sort of 4 o'clock onwards, and I've got very limited daylight. I like the nice weather. I like going to sit by the lake with the sunshine and have a barbecue, and that's all lovely. And speaking of bringing people out of hibernation, this time of year, I've got to put up with fucking Mariah Carey for 6 months. So all I want for Christmas, she started to defrost about this time of year, hasn't she? So
her can't be Wham doing with that. In particular, Wham has defrosted.
Oh, Michael Bublé will be awake soon. Oh, God.
But, those are things you don't have to encounter, though, are they?
You try and get through. I'll make a bet with you.
Yeah.
If you, and I trust you. For all your faults, I trust you. If you can get through to January the 1st without hearing, even by accident, All I Want for Christmas Is You by Mariah Carey,
yeah,
I'll give you 20 quid.
All right. Well, I have to say, I don't think I'll manage it, because for my work, I may well have to use that song, right? So
I'll be fair. I will exclude work.
Okay. All right.
If you can get by without a YouTube advert, the radio, a TV advert, anything. If you can get by going into a supermarket, if you can do it without, I'll be generous and exclude work purposes, 20 quid with your name on it, hand on your heart, if you can get through to the 1st of January without hearing Mariah.
Okay. I mean, what I'd say is that I won't mind hearing Mariah Carey two or three times over the Christmas period. I think this going back to the idiot tax, if you listen to pop radio over Christmas and you don't like those songs, you're in trouble. You may not be able to, because there are people that do they do the Wham thing, don't they? It's got a name, isn't it? They, to avoid Last Christmas, people try that challenge every year. That's sort of a thing that's become a game over the last few years.
I can't remember what it's called, but I know what you're talking about. But it seems like an impossibility, because how are you supposed to know what's next on the playlist of the radio station you're listening to, unless coming up next?
Well, that's it. You don't listen to the radio, so that's the thing. You've got to turn off radio. That's rule one.
But I like listening to the radio.
Well, if you don't want to hear Wham at Christmas, you can't listen to music radio, can you? You just can't, because it's going to be played, whether you like it or not.
True.
I can tell you from my work already that I think last week, I forget the exact number it reached, but Wham Last Christmas was already, I think, in the top 20 of the singles charts. And it looks like possibly this week it will be in the top 5. May even be... I don't think it's going to get to number 1, but it's looking like it's definitely going to be top 5 this week.
Doesn't it make Christmas boring? The same old dirge year after year.
Well, that's why we've got to learn to hibernate then. If you want to hibernate in the winter to get rid of it, then... You can maybe this is it. You hibernate when you want. You allocate your 6 months when you want to hibernate.
Although I've noticed something sort of shocking and slightly worrying about our formula.
Yeah.
You're going to hibernate during the summer.
Yeah.
I'm going to hibernate during the winter. This is terrible news for the podcast.
Yeah, but I mean, it's what everyone else has been screaming for years.
Trev, just before we finish the podcast, I talked extensively last week about my disappointment with the Mike Tyson-Jake Paul fight.
Yes, and it came up again earlier in this week's podcast, so it's still hurting.
And I used the word fight in air quotes for anyone who couldn't see my fingers furiously going there. Now, I just wanted to end on another note that I spotted, because as much as a disappointment as that whole fiasco was, the whole fight, just dreadful, I did find something in the build-up, which I forgot to mention, which really, really made me laugh.
Okay.
And it's a little bit dark, but it appealed to my macabre sense of humour. They sent a child who, bless her heart, she can't have been older than 10 years old. They sent a child to interview Mike Tyson about the theory of his legacy and what it means to him and how important is your legacy. Now, just remember when Mike, and he's entitled to his opinion and his answers, but just bear in mind, he's talking to a child.
Well, in your return to the ring for this fight, you are setting a monumental opportunity for kids my age to see the legend, Mike Tyson, in the ring for the first time. What type of legacy would you like to leave behind when it's all said and done?
Well, I don't know. I don't believe in the word legacy. I just think that's another word for ego. That's just some word everybody grabbed onto. Now it's used every 5 seconds. It means absolutely nothing to me. I'm just passing through. I'm going to die, and it's going to be over. Who cares about a legacy after that? What a big ego. So I'm going to die. I want people to think that I'm this. I'm great. No, we're nothing. We're just dead. We're dust. We're absolutely nothing. Our legacy is nothing.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that. That is something that I have not heard before, someone say that as an answer.
Can you really imagine somebody say, I want my legacy to be this way when you're dead? You think somebody really wants to think about you? I want people to think about me when I'm gone. Who the fuck cares about me when I'm gone?
Cheers, Mike.
Was he doing a Chris Eubank impression?
Who let a child interview Mike Tyson in that mood? I don't know. So, it doesn't matter. Fuck it. Soon we'll all be dead and no one will remember.
Yeah. Why think about the, if you're lucky, 80 years you've got ahead of you? It's all fucking pointless. Well, that's it for another Trev and Ben podcast. Before we go, some recommendations. I've got 3 things for you this week.
Excellent. What have we got?
2 movies. The first one I'm going to recommend, which is on Sky Cinema at the moment, is Dune Part 2. I think this is it. It finishes on this. Well, I wasn't quite sure when it finished. I thought there was 3 films. I looked it up and it's like, oh no, this is the second of 2. And I thought, it feels like there should be more. But then on the other hand, it's a cracking film, by the way. The first one was really good. This one is excellent, but they're very long. I mean,
just to make the obvious point, I'm assuming you do need to have seen Dune Part 1.
You do need to have seen Dune Part 1, yes. But you've got to, if you're going to do both, you need to fenced in a day, really. Part two is not far off the 3-hour mark.
Blimey.
I think part one isn't far off that either. But it's a very good film. I think well worth a watch. It's got Timothée Chalamet in it.
Right.
Who's very good, obviously. The other film I'm going to recommend is, again, on Sky Cinema at the moment, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. This is the latest film in the sort of revival of Ghostbusters. And it's very good. I really enjoyed it. It's got all the elements of the original Ghostbusters, including most of the stars, or those of them that are still with us. And it's got everything. It's got the comedy, it's got the charm, but it's got the new generation coming through. And I just really enjoyed it. I thought it's kept Ghostbusters alive, following the real disappointment of that reboot that, you know, I'm not saying it was because it was a female cast. It was just a bad idea to reboot it like that.
I think I heard someone quite politely say, oh, well, you're being sexist because it's all women and you can't handle that. And they just said, no, I don't really care that it was all women. I'm saying it was shite because it was shite.
Yes. I think had it have just been a film on its own, without trying to restart the Ghostbusters story from scratch, it would have been fine. See, yeah. I think that film would have been good had it have been the female cast, who were very good. I mean, you know, Melissa McCarthy's in it. It's one of my favourite actresses. Very funny. All the actresses in it are really good. But it wasn't continuing a story. I think had it been continuing the story, it might have worked. The last two proper, I'm going to call them proper Ghostbusters films, have carried on the story from where the original sort of, not left off, because time has passed. The Ghostbusters have sort of ceased to be, and then this is about them coming back. Really good film.
Nice. So your third recommendation, is that going to be on Sky Cinema as well, or something we can all watch?
No, this is... This is a comedy series on the BBC at the moment, so it's on the iPlayer. It's called Only Child, and it's a six-part sitcom. It's got Gregor Fisher, who people will probably know better as Rabsy Nesbitt.
Okay.
And Greg McHugh, who was in Fresh Meat, I think. He played Howard.
Oh, he's great, yeah.
So it's those two, father and son, and the son goes back to help his dad, who's losing his memory a little bit. I've got to say, it's one of the funniest sitcoms I've seen in a while. It's very funny. It's very sweet as well. But Gregor Fisher is just so funny. I think he's a much underrated comedy actor, I think.
Nice. And you said that's on the iPlayer.
That's on the BBC iPlayer. It's well worth a watch.
Lovely.
So there we are. That's it for this week. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us anytime about anything. We're at Trevor and Ben on X. And we'll catch you again next week. Till then, stay safe, stay well, take it easy.
Bye.